This is Wisconsin's Morning News. And now, while Vince and Eric are sleeping in, here's Libby Collins.
Oh, they're sleeping like babies this morning. We have a busy, busy show ahead on this July 3rd, and it's time to start celebrating because it is America's 250th birthday this weekend. Joining us to tell you what that weather's going to be like is TMJ4 meteorologist Brendan Johnson. And Brendan, a lot of people are wondering, are there barbecues and fireworks going to be affected? Because I know you are in storm watch.
Yeah. Yes, we are keeping a close eye on things, and I would definitely keep the rain in mind when making those outdoor plans, Libby. Have a backup plan. If you've got a barbecue, all right. If I were to see a downpour, where would I go? And if you are heading out to any outdoor activities, just have a rain plan in mind. I think that's the best we can do.
Are you expecting serious storms, or are they just going to be more or less cloudbursts here and there?
Yeah, so we're really looking for today. It's going to be pretty spotty. Not everyone's going to see it, but a couple of those storms could be on the stronger side, especially if we see enough sunshine. A best chance of storms today, really after midday through about 8 or 9 o'clock this evening. We'll look for highs to climb towards 90 degrees today, as long as we get that sunshine. Heat index values in the mid-90s, but gusty winds, as well as some downpours. I think a lot of us are now well aware of gusty winds as well because of those storms we had last night. Those are possible in the strongest storms.
Now, what about July 4th itself? Because as we said, this is going to be a party weekend for a lot of people.
It is. So good news, not as high of a severe chance for the 4th of July itself. But there does look to be a little bit more in the way of rainfall. We may start tomorrow morning with a couple of showers, maybe a rumble of thunder around, and then there will be dry time, so it's not a complete washout of a day, but I am seeing signals in the high-res models. It's mid to late afternoon, and yes, even into the early evening, we could have some scattered showers and really even a few thunderstorms around. I think we'll be able to break the widespread rain in time for firework displays if many of those are happening around 8 or 9 o'clock tomorrow. But there could still be some showers around. So if you do have plans tomorrow afternoon, evening, please have a rain plan. I think we might have a little bit more coverage on that rainfall.
And if you're driving back from the lake on Sunday, is it going to be pretty nice?
You know, we're still going to have some showers around on Sunday. I'd say the rain chances are a little bit lower. But, yeah, overall, not too terrible. And I should mention, tomorrow and Sunday, highs will be in the low 80s.
Oh.
We do not have any extreme heat headlines. Yeah, Libby, we finally were able to break the heat. It'll still be warm and humid, but not nearly as hot as it's been these last several days.
The heat dome has been broken. One last question for you, Brendan. Hot dogs or hamburgers?
Oh, that is such a good question. I'm going to go hamburger.
Yeah, I'm on your side.
With cheese.
Oh,
with cheese. It's
absolutely
important.
Absolutely. Hey, listen, have a wonderful 4th of July weekend, Brendan. Thanks for joining us today.
Yep, you too, Libby. Take care.
You too. It is 7:11, and I'm in for Vince and Eric until 10 o'clock this morning. And we've got a busy show. County Executive David Crowley is going to stop by this morning, and he's going to tell us all about tonight's drone show at the lakefront. You know, this is the second year they're doing it, and it's going to be more popular this year than it was last year. You know, nothing's more American than baseball, so we're going to be talking with Rick Schlesinger from the Milwaukee Brewers. We'll also hear from our own Sandy Max with where you can celebrate America 250 throughout southeastern Wisconsin. She's got the scoop on all the fireworks and all the drone shows. And, you know, with all of those fireworks, you know, your fur baby, at least in my case, my Migo, is going to react. So we are talking with the president of the Veterinary Association on how to help your dogs especially cope with all those big booms tonight and tomorrow. Now, also, if you're thinking about taking that boat out this weekend, we have a representative from the Coast Guard joining us with a reminder about what to do and, more importantly, what not to do just to stay safe if you're out on our lakes and waterways. I also talked this week with Rosie Rios. She's chair of America 250 about giving forth and how we can all be involved. And are you aware that starting tomorrow, that's the 4th of July, the parents with babies born from the beginning of this year through 2028 are going to be eligible for a $1,000 payout one time from the Department of Treasury for savings accounts for their newborns. Now, Brian Jacobson from Annex Wealth Management is going to be here. He's going to explain it all, especially if you're a grandparent. You know, they're trying to have a baby. This is important information for you. Also, if you know a veteran who's transitioning from civilian life and work, we're going to tell you about a free mentorship program that is so valuable to them. Also, you know, we've done stories here in the last couple months about the new world screw room. And a lot of people are saying, well, is this something I should be worried about? We'll have some answers for you from somebody who has done all the research and knows about screw rooms better than anybody. Also, it is finally the day of the Travis Taylor wedding. It's big, right? So our own Liz Lintonen has the scoop on what many are calling the wedding of the century. Liz, of course, is in the newsroom. Isaac's here pushing those buttons. And in just 2 minutes, it's the Week in Review right here on Wisconsin Morning News. Again, I'm Libby Collins in for Vince and Eric. And as Brendan Johnson just told you, it's going to be a hot day, but this is probably the last of them. We're going to get up to about 90 degrees with a heat index of 96. And remember, there could be some showers and storms later on today and tonight. 70 degrees at 7:14. Everybody's gone surfing USA. Well, as you know, a heat dome has invaded Milwaukee. There was a mural defaced. America Celebrates 250 and much more. It's the Week in Review, brought to you by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
What we do here is go.
This week, it's like they're throwing us in an oven.
A big heat dome is set to plant itself over the eastern U.S.
You're thinking about heading to the beach to try to escape the heat.
The National Weather Service is warning about a high risk of rip currents.
But I'm not done yet.
The cooling problem at UW-Madison.
A broken chilled water line has reduced air conditioning across campus.
But apparently there's a new term called tech wreck.
Yeah, it's a great rhyme, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. That's what caught my attention.
This isn't just, you know, the big companies, what they're paying for those data centers. What are you paying for your devices?
Our producer, Gina, actually made contact with Post Malone.
I still haven't watched it, by the way.
You touched it.
Chopped down in between songs and kind of ran along the crowd. And, yeah, stuck my hand out and I got lucky.
Really tough situation in Venezuela. Tens of thousands of people are still missing there under the rubble. And among those that are hoping to help, William Contreras, Jackson Churio, and Coach Nestor Corredor.
Already, cars were lining up, dropping off non-perishable food items, water bottles.
Where would the city come up with the billions of dollars that may be necessary to do this?
The city would use a financial instrument called a revenue bond to purchase the assets of We Energies.
This is a special report from ABC News. The Supreme Court upholding birthright U.S. citizenship to anyone born on U.S. soil.
Is it settled now in the current legal climate of our country?
Do you wonder today if anything is truly settled?
Wisconsin's Midday News is teeing off from the WTMJ Classic.
I don't know who put the Sinatra music behind the open, but bravo. It does feel like a kind of a frank sort of setting here, right? Overlooking the beautiful Morningstar Golfers Club.
A massive fire in a school in Milwaukee.
We are actively investigating. It's very hard right now. There's so much collapse interior to the building, and we're still extinguishing hotspots as we speak. To really get down to the brass tacks of it will be a bit.
On the top of the Empire State Building are two individuals dressed in black.
It is high, very tall. Yeah. And so think about climbing up from where, like, the viewing deck is up the spire to where they are. Like, I'm getting a little sick to my stomach actually watching it and thinking about how high they are.
But I remember thinking after Giannis and this deal was announced, there were no jersey burnings. But the defacing of the Giannis mural, I guess, is maybe the closest thing to that that I've seen.
There's parts that say, miss you. This is somebody's work. The artist.
Hey, Julia, happy Bobby Bonilla Day.
Okay, I didn't even know what you were talking about.
America 250, celebrations bigger than ever, and across the country, including right here in Milwaukee.
Each one has a dedicated team, whether it's local law enforcement, and federal law enforcement.
Tillman! Again! Malik Tillman! 2-0 United States!
What a week, eh?
What a week.
USA! USA!
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
And And that is the Week in Review, brought to you by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Text the word week to the Siding Unlimited talk and text line at 855-616-1620, and you can hear it all again. 719 and 70 degrees at WTMJ.
From TMJ4, I'm meteorologist Brendan Johnson with your storm team forecast. A chance for some afternoon and evening showers and thunderstorms. Not a complete washout, but those showers and storms will be around. One or two could be on the stronger side, especially south of I-94. We'll look for high temperatures to climb back towards 90 degrees today. Chance for rain continues overnight, mostly cloudy with a low of around 70. And we'll look for rounds of showers and storms on our Saturday. There will be some dry time with highs in the low 80s for 4th of July.
It is 72 in Cedarburg. Brookfield's at 72. Oak Creek has 73. 71 degrees at WTMJ at 722. Oh, boy, it's time to celebrate because it's America's 250th birthday. That means there's going to be parties. There's going to be barbecues. There's going to be fireworks. And does that make us all feel great? Well, wait a minute. Take a look around. If you've got a fur baby, they may not be feeling so great about it. And joining us is Dr. Michael Bailey. He is the president of the American Veterinary Medical Association. Dr. Mike, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, and happy 4th of July.
Boy, for some of us, yeah, but wait a minute. If we've got a dog, and I do, I have a dog, Migo, when those firecrackers start to go off, you just see it in their eyes. They start to change. So what do we need to know to get ready for, especially later on tonight?
Well, you know, it's all called pre-planning. This planning can start way ahead, maybe days, may even be months. So let's start off with making sure that our pets have identification on their collar and RFID chip. So if for some reason they get startled, bolt, separate from us, they can be reunited with us. Then we come down to the fact the noise itself can be a problem.
What sort of dangers do pet owners and their pets face, especially on this weekend, this 4th of July weekend?
Once again, separation. This is the time of year when pets get hit by cars more than any other time of year. So we want to protect them away from that. But then let's just talk about around home. We have friends and neighbors and family coming and visit us. Can those pets leave the yard? If they're in the yard, are they being exposed to foods that maybe they shouldn't have? You know, that barbecue and other things. Simple things like grapes can be deadly to your dog. So we want to be sure they aren't exposed to any of that. And we haven't even gotten to the fireworks yet. Now, we have fireworks coming later in the day. I recommend to folks that you take your pets out early in the day and you have a nice, long walk. Why? First of all, they're having attention paid to them. Second of all, you're tiring them out. Third of all, if it's hot like it's going to be around where I live, you're out when things, the asphalt, the concrete, and even the sand and the beach are going to be cooler for their pads.
Now, what if you have outdoor activities? A lot of us like to take our pets with us. Is it a good idea to take your dog with you if you're going to see fireworks?
I probably wouldn't take them with me to fireworks because no matter what, that's probably going to upset your dog. And here's the thing. They can hear and feel things 3 to 4 times the distance that we have. So if you're sitting at home and you see them looking a little anxious, it could be because they're already sensing something going on miles down the road. This is a time of year where if you know your pet's sensitive to it, pre-plan. Talk to your veterinarian. We have these anti-anxiety shirts, which if your pet is one of those who needs it, have it available. So if you need to, you can put it on, especially if you're taking them to the fireworks. But I don't recommend going to the fireworks with them because of the loud noise. And if you're really close to it, some of those fragments coming down can be very hot and their fur is flammable.
If you're leaving your pet alone at home because you're out celebrating a barbecue, maybe you're going to the fireworks, what should you do to make sure your pet's going to be okay if they're hearing these fireworks from a distance?
I like to tell people, you've taken them out for that walk. They're now somewhat tired. Have hopefully an inner room where you can go into, which they're used to being in, and you're playing with them a bit. You're rubbing their belly. You have a new toy with them. And then you make sure they have everything to make themselves comfortable, including their bed, so they know this is where I'm supposed to be. I recommend putting on music or talk radio, even the TV set, so that they have something to help break up that noise. But once again, some pets are just so hypersensitive, You may have to talk to your veterinarian about the clothing I've talked about, some over-the-counter medications, even prescription medications that can help their anxiety.
We're talking with Dr. Michael Bailey. He is the president of the AVMA. All right, so you said some medications, some over-the-counter things. What would be safe to give your pet if you don't talk to your vet first? And I would imagine dosage is based on size.
Right. And because of that, I'm not going to name anything specifically over the air, because this should be a conversation you have with somebody who knows your pet specifically. And while we're doing that, if you're traveling with your pet, be sure that you have what's required for health certificates, particularly if you're going over state borders or international borders. But even if they're just going around the corner with you, do not go into the store and say, I'm just going to be in there for a minute, and leave them in the car. Even if the air conditioning is running, cars have timers on them. They shut the cars off after a certain period of time, and the air conditioning will go off.
Cars
can heat up very fast.
That's what I was going to say, because we have had terrible, terrible heat all this week. It's going to be a little bit cooler here. But are there any specifics that you see, dogs especially, because they spend more time outside than cats, that you're seeing as far as heat dangers that they have suffered?
Hot asphalt, concrete sidewalk can burn their pads. If you see them drooling, if their mucous membranes are getting pale, if they're panting extremely fast, remember, they lose their heat by that respiration. They do not have pores in their skin like we do, so they need to have air that does move, that helps cool them down. Have a fan, but make sure it's a fan that protects them from sticking their nose or their tail in it, so that you can have moving air around them. And if your pet is showing any of these signs, you can put a cool compress on their pads, because if you feel their pads, they're going to be extremely warm because they have a lot of blood vessels down there. And this helps cool them down extremely fast. Cool water. Make sure they have a ready source of cool water, not cold water, not ice cold water. This can cause their blood vessels to constrict, and you can send them into shock.
And finally, Dr. Mike, does the American Veterinary Medical Association have any information that we can go just online to get?
AVMA.org is a plethora of information, and you are welcome to get on there and use it to your best. And once again, I'm going to recommend have a relationship with your local veterinarian, because they're going to try to tailor what's best for your pet in your location.
Dr. Michael Bailey, president of the AMVA, thanks for joining us today, and happy 4th of July.
You too. Everybody be safe, and make sure you enjoy your time with your pets.
728 and 71 degrees at WTMJ. R-O-C-K in the USA. R-O-C-K in the USA. And welcome back to the second half hour of Wisconsin Morning News. I'm Libby Collins in for Vince Vetrano and Eric Bilstead. And if you are looking for something to do tonight to celebrate America 250, they're doing it again at the McKinley Beach. It is the July 3rd drone show, and to talk with us about it, we've got Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley. Dave, first of all, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
You are out early, considering you got a party on the beach later on today.
Hey, you know, it's a great holiday weekend. We're celebrating the 250th birthday of the United States. So this is going to be a great day. I'm looking forward to it.
Now, this is the second time you're doing the drone show. What was the reaction last year?
Oh, we had a good reaction, actually. And so we want to continue to build upon that success. And to be honest with you, Libby, we're actually raising the bar. And so it's not just going to be the same type of drone show that people seen last year. We're going to have family friendly activities, starting at 3 o'clock at McKinley Beach. But what's unique about this drone show this year is that we're not just syncing it up with music, but it's going to be a pyrotechnic drone show.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
So there's going to be fire and drones and
yes.
Music?
Yes, all of that, all of the above, and great company and just great people to hang around with.
Now, you're starting at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So tell us exactly what's going to go on.
Yeah. So folks can start coming down at 2 o'clock and start claiming some parking spots. There will be a $20 charge for parking, but starting at from three to seven, we're basically going to have family friendly activities. So we're going to have vendors. We're going to have bounce houses, face painting, you name it. We want to make sure that we're kind of bringing a fun feel, fun activities to McKinley Beach. And so come on down. And then about 9:20 is when we're going to start the drone show. So we're going to light up the sky on the 3rd of July.
All right. Now, how explain the drones to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I know they're really cool when they're done right. but I have no idea how they sync that out and put those shows together.
Yeah, it is. It is a very elaborate operation, and so you know they all talk with one another. When you think about the technology now that we all have access to, you know they sync with one another. They're basically sending signals to each other to make up these different images. And so we're going to be putting up is a lot of iconic Milwaukee landmarks, and so it's going to be really exciting. And then we sync it up with music. So it's a partnership with Radio Milwaukee. And so if you are in, you can visit our website, Milwaukee Parks website, and it will show you the viewing areas. So if you're in the, you know, the best viewing area, you'll be able to hear the music directly. But where you may not hear the music, you can download an app so you can see the drones and sync it directly up with Radio Milwaukee. This is going to be an exciting
meeting. Are you only going to be able to see the drones directly from the beach, or are they up high enough that we'll see it in other parts of the city?
So you can see them in other parts, and we have a map on the Milwaukee Parks website, Milwaukee County Parks website, that really shows the best viewing areas and where we recommend you download the app so you can hear the music.
How many people are operating the drones?
Oh, so we are working with Northern Lights. We worked with them before. I'm not exactly sure how many people, but they've been doing this work for a long time all across the state of Wisconsin. This is the second time we're going to be working with them.
How many drones are there?
So, hundreds.
There's a lot of drones out there.
It is a lot of drones. There's going to be hundreds of drones. So this will be three waves. And so we will have three 15-minute waves of drones, so a total of 45 minutes where you're going to see us lighting up that sky.
So when you say it's three different time periods, is there a break in between each 15-minute segment?
Just a small break just to make sure that the drones can come back to the landing areas where we're going to be flying them from, and then you'll see more drones going in the air. But they basically come back and forth to make sure that they're getting a quick charge.
We're talking with Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley. The drone show tonight, you said 9:20-ish?
9:20 is when we start the drone show, but you can show up at 3 o'clock.
Why are the drones a better choice than traditional fireworks?
Well, I know a lot of people want to see the fireworks, particularly on the lakefront. But when we think about where we were coming from, when I became the county executive, it was put on pause during the COVID-19 pandemic. And I don't think people understand how expensive fireworks can really be, you know, and you're talking anywhere between $350,000 to $400,000
for a single fireworks show.
For a single fireworks show. And that's just for the fireworks. That's not including the public safety. That's not including, you know, porta potties or anything like that. And so it can get really expensive. And so when we looked at the drone option, it was one, it was a lot more businesses that were willing to actually partner up with us so we can get the dollars that was needed. And you think about the cost, you know, it's half. It's half
really?
Of what it actually costs to do these fireworks. And so this provides us a greater opportunity to expand what we're doing on McKinley Beach, providing the family fun activity, but also making sure that we are thinking about sustainability, making sure we're thinking about our downtown neighbors and keeping down the noise, the lights, and just making sure that we're doing things that's good for our environment.
Now, I had mentioned that a little bit earlier, we might get rain.
Yeah.
Around 6, maybe to 8 o'clock in the morning. What's the plan if it's raining tonight?
Well, we're going to do everything that we can to make sure that the show goes off without a hitch. But if there is a rain tonight, we do have a rain date, which will be on this Sunday. And so people will be able to join us on Sunday if we have to cancel. But right now, seems like that rain may come a little earlier or may not even come at all, but we are going to be paying attention.
I know you are really watching it. You've got your staff is looking at their radar and everything.
Oh, yeah. And some of us are welcoming this to help cool us off the past couple of days that we've had.
Well, the good news is that it's going to get cooler tomorrow.
Yeah.
All right, so bottom line, if people come at 3 o'clock, are there things they can and they can't bring with them?
As of right now, you know, we're treating this just like any other park. So you can come on down. But you know, we don't have to worry about nobody's, you know, staying overnight, camping out places or anything like that. But, you know, treat this as if you're going to the park. And so you can bring anything. But, you know, let's make sure that we're patronizing many of the vendors. So there's going to be food. There's going to be.
What kind of food are you going to have?
A wide range of stuff. And so there's a lot of food vendors. I know Bartolotta's is one of our partners that we have. The roundhouse should be open, as well as, you know, face painting. We're going to have, you know, Miller Coors, Lakefront Brewery as well on tap. So come on down and have a good time.
I'm going to ask you what I asked Brendan Johnson earlier this morning. Are you a hot dog or a hamburger guy?
I'm a hamburger guy.
Okay, welcome to the club.
I'm a hamburger
guy. Okay, so there's three of us now. We're in the hamburger, with or without cheese?
With cheese.
There you go.
I'm from Wisconsin.
I love it. All right, well, listen, it is going to be a great night on the lakefront. Yeah. It is the second annual drone show, so I'm kind of getting the idea. You're planning on a third and a fourth and a fifth?
Well, we're going to continue to do this work. And, you know, I want to say first and foremost, thank you to the great partnership that we have with the Milwaukee Parks Foundation. We wouldn't be able to do this work without them, as well as our presenting sponsor, which is Michael Hupe from Hupe and Abraham. And he's the, this is the second year he's the presenting sponsor. So we would truly appreciate his partnership.
Yeah. And has he told you exactly why he feels this so strongly about doing this?
Well, he wants to continue to give back to the community. You know, I think that he looks at our entire region as far as supporting his business and the work that he has been doing and the lives that he has been able to make a positive impact on. And he wants to just continue to give back. And so we truly appreciate him stepping up, being the presenting sponsor. And I mean, and he enjoyed it so much that as soon as the drone show was done, he came right up and said, I want to do it again next year.
Oh, I think there are a lot of people excited about it. And it sounds like you're stepping it up with pyrotechnics.
Oh, yes. But we do want folks to know that they can visit their municipal website, any city, town, or village, or excuse me, city or village here in Milwaukee County. We still do our fireworks at Milwaukee County, different Milwaukee County parks around Milwaukee County. And so they'll still be happening in your neighborhood near you, but you got to go online to figure out where they're at.
And some of them are tonight, some of them are tomorrow. Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, thanks so much for getting up early and coming on in.
Hey, well, you know, every day is a good day, especially, you know, when you're celebrating 250 years of a great country that I just love so much.
Thank you, David Crowley. Always great to have you here. It's 7:44 on WTMJ. Speaking of a great country, in just a minute, we are doing a very special WTMJ conversation this weekend. We'll tell you about it right after this.
I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot.
This weekend, we're celebrating the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. And I talked with Marquette University Associate Professor Brian Renflesh, who says the odds that the colonies could beat the British were extremely low. I don't think a lot of people realize that the men who signed the Declaration of Independence knew they were signing their own death warrants.
Absolutely. Even Benjamin Franklin even said that. And he's one of the leading architects of that, along with obviously Jefferson, who wrote it, but also John Adams and other individuals who, again, had those dreams. And again, this dream should never have become real. This is whatever you think about American history, whatever you think about the politics of it or the whitewashing of it or whatever you think about it. I don't think there should be a United States of America. It is amazing that all of those circumstances just converge, like whatever you want to call it. In that unique moment, in those unique circumstances, in that unique thought of time, and we won. That shouldn't have happened. Nobody thought we would win.
And you can hear the entire conversation with Marquette Professor Brian Renflesh this Sunday morning at 11 o'clock for a very special 250 WTMJ conversation. Coming up next, Sandy Max is going to join us, and she's going to tell you where you can see fireworks and drone shows tonight and tomorrow night. If you are wondering where you can do fireworks and drone shows tonight and tomorrow, here's Sandy Max from What's on Tap.
If you love the drones or you're interested in them, Milwaukee, Lake Geneva, and Franklin are your drone hotspots. The Lakefront Drone Show in Milwaukee, that is Friday. That is going to be a 45-minute synchronized drone show that starts at about 9:15, and there will be pyrotechnic drones lighting up the sky, images and themes celebrating patriotism, and you'll see some of Milwaukee's iconic landmarks. This is the second annual July 3rd drone show at McKinley Beach in downtown Milwaukee, and then July 4th in Lake Geneva. Strong drone show. It's a light show over Geneva Lake that will be celebrating America's 250th birthday, and, you know, they like to do it right there on the lake. There'll be food trucks and balloon artists, roaming performers, and live music. So that's a hotspot for drones on July 4th. And then, stretching out the celebration, Franklin's drone light show is Sunday. And they do both fireworks and a separate drone light show as part of their extended celebration. So that's where you can get your 21st century drone celebration on. But if you like the old school fireworks, no problem. Friday fireworks in Menominee Falls, Muskego, Oak Creek, and Waukesha. And then the 4th of July, Brown Deer, Cedarburg, Cudahy, Franklin, Germantown, Glendale, Greendale, Greenfield, Hales Corners, a lot of the Milwaukee County parks, Pewaukee, Port Washington, Racine, Shorewood, South Milwaukee, St. Francis, Tosa, West Dallas, West Bend, and Whitefish Bay all have July 4th fireworks and displays to be proud of. And the Menominee Falls fireworks Friday will be after the parade. Parade starts at 7, so you still got time to make your plans for that. Oak Creek's fireworks Friday are at 9:30, and Waukesha's fireworks are at 9:30 all Friday night. And then Saturday, those July 4th fireworks, including Brown Deer and Cedarburg with the big 4th of July celebrations. Cudahy and Franklin do their fireworks on Saturday before they do their drone show on Sunday. And Germantown has a full day of fun for the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, including cornhole, kickball, a foam party, and face painting, along with their live music. And like I said, Glendale, the Greendale Lions Fest has their 4th of July celebration. Hales Corners, they've got their Firecracker 4 run going on, in addition to bed races and a patriotic pet costume contest as part of their celebration before they launch their fireworks at 9:30.
Thanks a lot, Sandy. Can't wait for the patriotic pet costume. Maybe I'll bring my dog. All right, 7:53, but you're probably asking yourself, what's the weather going to be? Well, here's Brendan Johnson.
From TMJ4, I'm meteorologist Brendan Johnson with your Storm Team forecast. A chance of afternoon and evening showers and thunderstorms. Some could be strong, especially south of Interstate 94. We'll look for high temperatures to climb close to 90 degrees today. Heat index values in the mid-90s. Chance for showers and storms continues into the overnight. Cloudy, low of around 70 degrees. And we'll look for rounds of showers and a few thunderstorms on our 4th of July. There will be some dry time, but rain will be around. Highs in the low 80s. Additional showers and storms possible on Sunday with a high near 80 degrees. Sunshine, though, back for Monday and Tuesday with highs in the upper 70s and low 80s. You can always catch the latest forecast over at TMJ4.com. My meteorologist, Brendan Johnson.
In Waukesha, it's 74 degrees. Mequon has 74. Racine, only 63. And it's 73 at 7:54 in Milwaukee.
Only in America, dreaming in red, white, and blue.
As Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley said, there are going to be a lot of people down at McKinley Beach, a lot of people at all the parks around Milwaukee County and into Waukesha County and all our counties are southeastern Wisconsin. And, you know, as we celebrate, you might be wondering how secure some of those areas are, especially at night. Well, I talked to Scott Johnson from Baycom about how and where securities are set up in some of these county parks.
The key is to try to concentrate the cameras on the busiest areas or where the most people are. When you talk about pavilions or when they're driving up into the parking areas, so you really try to focus on having the cameras there. In different areas, you try to focus on more of a longer camera that can cover a larger part of the park area. But the key is where most of the people are hanging out during different parts of the day.
Do you think that just the fact that you might have those signs up saying this area is secured by cameras, is that a deterrent for bad behavior?
100%. It might not be for, you know, every bad actor, if you will, but there are some people where it's just going to occur anyway. But I think for a majority of the public, that deterrence does help quite a bit.
Scott told me what's most often seen on some of these cameras.
Some of the things you see is vandalism. When you talk about a deterrent, there's times where you put these up and then you'd see there'd be consistent vandalism, spray paint on, you know, pavilions and on walls, and it drastically dropped because they see that camera and they know that, okay, I better move on and go to a different area.
And finally, Scott reminds us what we should keep in mind if we decide to go to one of these parks to celebrate this weekend.
I think the biggest thing is to be aware of what's going on around you. Certainly, public safety is doing a great job of monitoring and using their cameras to observe, but you also have to use your own instincts. If you're in an area and you see some things that you don't like, you know, you want to say something, make the phone call and get 911 involved and to be able to address that, or just take yourself out of that situation and make sure you and your family are safe.
And again, that is Scott Johnson from Baycom. 7:57, coming up here after the news, we're going to be talking with a representative of the United States Coast Guard. Great Lakes District about safety on the water. You know, we've had quite a few accidents here that we've been reporting over the last couple of weeks, and it means people aren't remembering what they need to do if they're going out on those waterways. And he's going to give us some information on what we need to know before we go out. Also, we've got somebody talking to us about transitioning. No, not that way. Transitioning from the military to civilian life, and especially getting used to what it's going to be like in the corporate or the business world outside of the military. And there's a mentorship program that's free and open to everybody. And guess what? If you are in business, they're asking if you want to be a mentor. That's all ahead coming up here after the news on WTMJ.
This is Wisconsin's Morning News. And now, in for Eric Bilstad and Vince Vitrano, here's Libby Collins.
Ah, they deserve a day off, don't they? Of course they do. We'll be here till 10 o'clock this morning while they take their three-day weekend. But before we do anything else, I keep checking on these stories. The last couple of weeks, we've reported on a number of accidents in lakes around the area and people who ended up dead because they didn't go out on their boat and do what they're supposed to do. So joining us is Recreational Boating Program Specialist for the Coast Guard, Great Lakes District, Michael Barron. First of all, good morning, Michael, and a happy 4th of July to you.
Hey, good morning, Libby. Happy 4th of July, and thank you for having me on this morning.
Well, as you are aware, there have been a number of boating accidents already, and we're just here at the beginning of the season.
This time of year is really a dangerous time of year. For a lot of people, this is the first weekend, you know, that they've been able to get out onto their, you know, onto their boats. These, you know, accidents such as the one in, you know, in Chicago that you're referring to will, you know, will be investigated. The state agencies and law enforcement will investigate it. And usually it comes down to the same thing. Some sort of operator error would have led to that, you know, to that accident.
You know, when you mention operator error, do you find that with most of these boating accidents and the fact that, you know, people end up falling off their boats, is that all to do with the person who's operating it? I mean, bottom line, when you see these accidents, who is at fault?
Okay, it's very interesting because we were just talking about this. Every year, you know, the Coast Guard tracks the boating accidents, you know, nationally. They're required by, you know, by law to put together their statistics. And they come up with the top 10 primary causes for these accidents. And out of those accidents, it's normally 6 to 7 out of the top 10 are some sort of operator error. For example, operator inattention. The operator of the boat is not paying attention to his surrounding area. He has not posted a lookout. You know, you can look at operator experience. By not taking a boating safety course, you know, they don't have the experience to operate that boat. So those are some of the main reasons that you're going to see, you know, some of these accidents. And we've been referring to more as incidents because a lot of times accidents can be prevented. So we're kind of looking at those different things. It's like, you know, boating under the influence. That's a choice that operator made, is to consume alcohol or drugs before getting behind the wheel of that boat.
Yeah, and that's huge because how many people, you know, they'll take beer out or wine or even hard liquor onto the boat because that's part of their recreation. Do you advise not drinking at all if you are on a boat?
Libby, 100%, you know, leave it on the pier, leave it there for, you know, for after the fact. You know, not only is alcohol, a bad thing just by drinking it, because it affects your central nervous system, all those different things. But once you combine alcohol with the effects of being on the boat, the heat, the motion, you know, all these different things, these environmental stressors will enhance that alcohol. So, you know, instead of being just impaired by the alcohol, it has another effect on you where you're even in worse shape if you're just, you know, not drinking at all, if that makes sense.
Yeah. The other thing that I'm wondering is, you know, and we said that there have already been a couple of incidents and drownings in the smaller lakes. Do you find that a lot of people, if they're in an inland lake, aren't as careful as if they're out on Lake Michigan?
You know, yes, you know, and statistically, if you look at, and if you take all the, you know, all the great lakes, yes, obviously boating incidents occur on the Great Lakes, but you're going to see the higher concentrations on inland lakes and rivers and stuff, because I think people feel, you know, that they have to be better prepared if they're out on, you know, Lake Michigan or one of the other Great Lakes. But when they're a little bit closer to home on a smaller inland lake, yeah, it's not as dangerous, which, you know, is not obviously, you know, it's not true.
We're talking with Michael Barron. He's the recreational boating program specialist for the Coast Guard Great Lakes District. All right, I don't know about you, Michael. When I get in a car, I always put on a seatbelt. If you're getting in a boat, should you always wear a life jacket?
In my world, yes. If you're on a vessel, you should be wearing a life jacket. When the Coast Guard does law enforcement boardings, you know, well, we try to tell the people, hey, it's great that you have, you know, your life jackets on board. You know, that's a victory. That's a victory within it, you know, in itself. If we can get them to wear the life jacket, you know, that's even better. And one of the ways that we talk about it is, you know, much like with your seatbelt. If you're already in the accident, you know, it's hard to put on your seatbelt. Same thing with a life jacket. If you've been, you know, thrown overboard, it's awful hard to put a life jacket on while you're in the water. So it's better to just wear it and be safe.
Yeah, you know, and another thing that I think people need to be aware of, because so many people enjoy kayaks, canoes, they might be on the boards where they're, you know, paddle boards. How safe are they on waterways, and what should they be thinking? Because if they're just out there with a paddle, a lot of people think, oh, this is easy, the water's smooth, I'm fine, I'm not worried about it.
It's, you know, and it's interesting because, you know, the paddle craft community, you know, within the recent past, it's not as, you know, you don't hear about it as much today as you did earlier, but all of a sudden, that community just exploded. You know, everybody was going out and buying kayaks, and, you know, you could go to your local store, you know, whether it be, you know, Walmart, Nards, whatever you had, you could buy a kayak, a paddle, and a life jacket and be on the water that afternoon having no training, because you just knew, you know, you just know you want to be on the water. You have to take the paddling, you know, seriously, because there are boating laws that, you know, that regular, and I say regular, that motorboats have to go through. You know, they have to have lights on when they're operating at night. Same thing if you're on a kayak. You can operate at night, but you need to have some sort of light. You need to have a sound producing device. Your level of awareness and your level of safety has to go up to the next level, because like you said, they sit lower in profile in the water, and then if you have that operator of a power vessel that, you know, is not doing a good job, you know, paying attention to his surroundings, I mean, potentially it's a very dangerous situation. And that's why we try to, you know, we're trying so hard to get the boating community to embrace, you know, this safety culture.
All right. You mentioned the classes that they should take. How can people find out where to sign up for the classes for boating safety?
There's a number of different ways they can do it. What I usually tell people, since I work, you know, that I work for the Coast Guard, if they sign on to, you know, they can, you know, search for the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary Find a Class. And there's an option on that website where you can punch in your zip code and it will bring up a list of classes for your particular, you know, for your particular area. That's what I usually recommend to people, but they can also reach out to their state boating agencies, you know, for that, because they do announce it. You know, they do announce that, you know, there will be boating safety classes given. But like I said, I find that with the Coast Guard Auxiliary website, you know, you can find a class pretty quickly.
And one last question. How old should you be before you operate a boat?
Oh, boy. That's, you know, the operation, you know, the operational laws for boats, that's basically a state, you know, a state issue. And off the top of my head, I don't recall what, you know, what Wisconsin, you know, has for, you know, operating. You know, there are some kids that are more mature, you know, mature than others, and, you know, they might be able to do it. So I think it would be premature for me to say, you know, give you a certain age. You'd have to check with your, you know, with your state boating laws and see what, you know, what they say.
But two important things: don't drink if you're operating a boat, and wear a life jacket.
Absolutely. And just so everybody knows, in Wisconsin, that this weekend, the state and Coast Guard will be conducting Operation Dry Water. Okay. Operation Dry Water is a year-round campaign for boating under the influence, education, awareness, and enforcement. So if your boats are out this weekend, they should be seeing a higher concentration of law enforcement, specifically looking for operators that are impaired. So they, you know, they do this one, we do this one weekend a year to try to, you know, do our best to keep the water safe. So you should be seeing, you know, boaters should be seeing that throughout Wisconsin, you know, as well as across the nation.
Michael Barron, Recreational Boating Program Specialist for the United States Coast Guard Great Lake District. Thank you so much for being here with us, and have a happy 4th of July weekend, sir.
Libby, thank you very much. Happy 4th of July, and have a safe boating day.
It's 8:18. Do you know somebody who just got out of the military and is trying to figure out what they want to do in their civilian life? Or maybe you know somebody who is a spouse of an active duty service member, and they're in a new area, and they're trying to find work. Well, there's a partnership that can help them. Joining us is Nicole Murray. She is Vice President of Strategic Partnership for the American Corporate Partners, and you are there to help as a volunteer organization those military members and those spouses who are looking to navigate their way in the civilian world. Tell us about it.
I work for American Corporate Partners, or ACP, and we are a national nonprofit focused on combating the underemployment of veterans and military spouses. So it's not just about finding a job. It's about finding the right job and navigating a career for those veterans and military spouses. And we do that through one-on-one free mentorship between the service member or spouse and somebody from the civilian workforce, not just corporate, but small business or government, cross-industry.
How does that mentorship program work?
We're going to meet you where you are. So we call the veterans or service members, you know, transitioning out of the military, or our military spouses, they're the protege. And then we are interviewing them. We're figuring out, what do they want to work on? What's success look like for them for this mentorship? We're going to talk to them. We're going to figure out what their goals are. We're going to do something similar on the mentor side. We're going to find out what experience that mentor has, what they think they should be able to talk about, and we're going to find that perfect match. It's all done by our staff of about 70. Not done by AI, or it's not algorithm based. It's, we're having those conversations with people beyond just that application, even just to get a personality feel for everybody, mm-hmm. to make sure that that pair is going to be successful. But more than that, I think what a big differentiator is for ACP is our staff is going to fully support both the mentor and the protege throughout the mentorship, offering resources, support, and really holding the pair accountable.
I know you're looking for mentors. What kind of commitment do they have to make?
Absolutely. We are looking for mentors. We have about 5,000 active mentorship pairs, but we have about 1,000 service members and spouses looking for mentors right now. And that's not to say that we don't have any mentors on the bench, but again, because we are so much looking for that fit, so we need to broaden our audiences for those new mentors. Anybody who has worked in the civilian world for 5 or so years is eligible to be a mentor because we're meeting people where they are. So most of our mentors have absolutely no military connection. So they're just civilians looking to give back.
We're talking with Nicole Murray. She is with American Corporate Partners, and they do mentorship for those who have served in the military as well as their spouses. But you personally have had an experience with ACP.
I worked in Major League Baseball for the Washington Nationals for about 14 seasons. And as a military spouse, my husband got active duty orders to Hawaii. There are no sports in Hawaii. I knew I was going to have to leave my job. I went through a very predictable identity crisis. And so I was going to be in Hawaii for this short time. And I remembered ACP because ACP has a partnership with Major League Baseball. That's how I first heard about ACP. And I went to them and I said, you know what? I'm not looking for a job while I'm here, but I'm wondering, you know, how do I stay relevant what is my experience good for outside of sport? So I got matched with a mentor. We met once a month virtually for a year, about an hour a month, but that was broken up, not just, you know, virtual Zoom team calls, but also text messages, checking in, you know, how are you doing? You know, hey, what do you think of this job description? Or I started consulting when I was in Hawaii. It's, you know, hey, Christy, I'm having this problem with one of my clients. How would you address this? And it was really just having somebody in my corner. But now, as you said, I'm an alum of the program. And now I mentor in the program as well. I'm on my second mentorship through ACP, and I mentor fellow military spouses through the program.
Well, tell us how to get involved.
We have a website, acp-usa.org. There is an application on there if you want to be a mentor, or I know we're talking, there is that acute need for mentors right now, but if you know somebody who has served that you think could benefit as a protege, even if they have a job, but maybe they're looking to advance, you can go on our website, you can apply to be a mentor, you can apply to be a protege, you fill out a short application, and then our team is going to get in touch.
Is there any cost involved?
Absolutely not. This is one that is free and that complements other things that you might be doing on your professional development journey.
Nicole, I know you are helping a lot of people out there, and I love the idea that there are people who are involved in the business world who can become mentors.
Absolutely. We always say, because their service deserves our service. And it really is this really wonderful volunteer opportunity that's virtual. It's flexible. It's on your schedule. You can change a life over your lunch break. You know, what I hear from mentors, they say, you know what, I get just as much out of it, if not more, than my protege. And it's not just about that nice feeling of giving back, but really it helps them develop their coaching skills, their communication skills. It gives them a better understanding of the military. This is a way to give this back to a community that so needs it, because this is a whole new world for them. And, you know, when you're transitioning to civilian service after military service, you shouldn't have to start over. You shouldn't have to start from scratch.
Nicole Murray from American Corporate Partners, thanks so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you so much for the opportunity.
It's 8:29 and 73 degrees. Welcome back to Wisconsin Morning News. Vince and Eric are out today. I'm Libby Collins. Remember back in April when Governor Tony Evers signed legislation opening the door to online sports betting in Wisconsin? Well, for sports fans across the state, it sounded simple enough. The bill was signed. Online betting was approved. So when can you start placing wagers on your phone? Here are the details of that from WTMJ's Neil Doyle.
The answer for now, not yet. I spoke with Jeff Zuchodny, a senior news analyst with Covers.com, and he's been keeping tabs on what's happening here in Wisconsin.
The bill passing started a new process that will take potentially months more to complete before you start seeing these, you know, tribe-offered online sports books in Wisconsin.
Unlike many states that have legalized online sports betting through a state-run regulatory framework, Wisconsin's path runs through its tribal nations. The legislation approved by lawmakers made a relatively small change to state law, allowing wagers to be placed online if they're processed through servers located on tribal land. But before anyone can place a bet from their couch, Wisconsin's 11 federally recognized tribes must renegotiate gaming compacts with the state. Those agreements then need approval from the federal government, and that's where things stand right now. Governor Evers recently met with tribal leaders to begin those discussions.
These talks, I understand, you know, they kind of kicked off earlier this month, and so it'll take time to reach those agreements.
The governor has also made clear he wants a system that benefits all 11 tribes equally. When he signed the bill, Evers said he would not support a model that allows some tribes to reap major benefits while leaving others behind. That means the negotiations are not simply about launching an app. They're also about how revenue will be shared. And because Wisconsin is using a tribal gaming model, the process is different from what happened in neighboring states.
Wisconsin is different from a lot of other states in that they've gone this way with these federally reviewed and approved gaming compacts to bring legal online sports betting to the state.
In fact, the model Wisconsin hopes to use has really only been tested in one other state, that being Florida. There, the Seminole tribe negotiated a compact with the state and launched online sports betting using what's known as a hub-and-spoke model. That's essentially the same approach Wisconsin lawmakers approved, which means the big companies like DraftKings and FanDuel are not allowed. Now, the difference, Florida only has one tribe. Wisconsin has 11. So despite the steps still ahead, Zuchodny believes the process is moving in the right direction. And if he had to make a prediction of his own, he thinks Wisconsin sports bettors may not have to wait a whole lot longer.
It's very possible you could have it done by the end of the year. I think, just to piggyback on what I was saying earlier, if I'm thinking that the governor wants to get these compacts approved and off the federal government before his term runs out, before he leaves office, I would also kind of think that he would want to see it, you know, launch under his watch.
Of course, negotiations still need to happen. Federal approvals are still required and legal challenges remain possible. But Zuchodny says one thing is clear. Online sports betting is coming to Wisconsin. The question isn't if, it's when. Neil Doyle, WTMJ News.
Thanks a lot, Neil. Well, once online sports betting goes live, Wisconsin will be the 31st state that offers online wagering. Now, I'm not somebody who gambles, but I will tell you this. If you want to make money, you invest it. And the younger you begin, the better it is and the more money grows. Well, coming up next, there is a new opportunity that begins tomorrow, where if you have a child born between January 1st of 2025 and the end of 2028, the government is going to give you seed money to start saving for your child. We'll tell you about it right after this on Wisconsin Morning News. Well, of course, today we're getting ready to celebrate America's 250th birthday. But are you aware there's a new government-backed investment program that's going to launch tomorrow that can help millions of children build wealth for their future? Joining us is Brian Jacobson. He is the chief economic strategist from Annex Wealth Management. And Brian, I think a lot of people are confused, but they're excited at the same time, because beginning on the 4th of July, they've got something called Trump accounts. Tell us what those are.
Yeah, thanks. It is pretty exciting. There's been a very long run-up to this, because this was actually created as part of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act from just about a year ago. So there's been a lot of media attention. There's also been some philanthropists, Michael Dell being one of the most notable ones, who's pledged billions of dollars to donate to some of these accounts. Plus, there is the ability that if you have a child who is born between 2025 and then the end of 2028, for the government to actually seed or put in $1,000 into these accounts. So the kid has to be born during that window of January 1st, 2025 to December 31st, 2028. So there's been a lot of money thrown out there, and it, I think, has a lot of people excited. And as you said, beginning July 4th, people can actually start funding these accounts. Now, in order to actually open one of these, there's a number of different ways to do it. But if you go to the IRS's website, so irs.gov, you can easily find on there a way to open up a Trump account. You fill out a form with the government. It's form 4547. I bet you can guess where they got those numbers from. President Trump was president number 45 and 47. And that basically kicks off the process to open up the account, and then you can start funding them.
All right. Now tell us about the government seeding these eligible accounts. Is it $1,000?
Yes, it is. So that's really, I think, the standout feature of these, is that it's $1,000 to go into the accounts for children born between January 1st, 2025 and December 31st, 2028. So if you were born outside of that window, you don't get that quote unquote free money, because we know it's not free. It's coming from taxpayers. But it is a way to help fund these accounts. And especially if you think about the way in which a lot of lower income families, they find it challenging not only to save for themselves, but especially for their children. So one of the ideas behind this is that if you can can get kids practicing good financial hygiene early by contributing to it, you can actually maybe help build wealth over time. Other countries that have tried similar things by providing kind of seed capital for kids, it actually does result in higher savings rates, lower poverty rates, and just generally better outcomes over time.
We're talking with Brian Jacobson. He is the chief economic strategist for Annex Wealth Management. Brian, where does the money go?
Yeah.
And how does it grow over the years?
Sure. So there are really specific limits as to what can be invested in. Basically, what you're doing is you're creating an account, and then you'll be contacted by a couple different firms that are administering it. But it allows you to invest in a broadly diversified portfolio of U.S. equity, either index funds or exchange-traded funds. So it's really to limit speculative risk. The allocations are really strictly confined to being broad-based U.S. companies that you can invest in. Think about things that track like the S&P 500, so 500 of the largest companies in the United States. And the management fees as well are capped at 0.1 percentage points. And so that's really important when you're looking at different investments, especially mutual funds and exchange-traded funds. Each one of them has, as part of them, an operating expense or management expense. And so the government is saying, look, we don't want people overpaying for these things that are just tracking the broad U.S. market. So that's really the strict investment mandate.
Can grandparents and other relatives contribute to this fund?
Yes, they can. There can be some complications around that. So the contribution limits are capped at $5,000 annually per child. Now, that's going to be indexed for inflation after 2027. So $5,000 is a lot today, but, you know, 10 years from now, it might not be quite as much. So they're going to index that for inflation. Employers can contribute up to $2,500 pre-tax via certain what are called cafeteria plans, so an employee benefit. But then individuals can also contribute to it, but it is considered a gift, right? And so now you have to get into kind of thinking about maybe estate tax planning. But parents, grandparents can put up to, you can think about it, the total amount, whether it is from the parent or from an employer, it can actually go towards that $5,000 aggregate limit per year.
And what happens when the child turns 18?
That's some of the complications. So the funds are locked up until the age of 18. And then once the child reaches that age, the money, it converts basically to what's considered a traditional IRA, an individual retirement account. Then the withdrawals, if they take out the money, anything that wasn't based on a contribution, like what we call basis in the jargon, the earnings on that, so the gains, are taxed as ordinary income. And this is where you have to kind of think about, do I want to open up a separate account for the child and fund that? Do I want to do a 529 for education? And then if they use it for education, they don't get taxed. Or do I want this Trump account? So there are a lot of different things to consider, which is what we really specialize in doing, is working through making some of those informed decisions for individuals to help them show the tax consequences over time.
So Annex Wealth Management, are you starting to work with people on these accounts and giving them advice on how to make sure that their kids can benefit from this?
Yeah, it's really doing that type of what we would call scenario analysis about, if I want to help fund my child's education, should I do a 529 plan, considering you have fewer limits there, plus the tax advantage where when it comes out, as long as it's for qualified educational expenses, it doesn't get taxed. And you also can have it where maybe it gets converted to a Roth IRA if you don't use up the money. All sorts of benefits on the 529, but now there's also benefits for these Trump accounts. So really it's about, what are the pros and the cons of these different types of accounts? Which one is the best one to help you reach your financial goals?
Wow. Well, it's a terrific benefit if you are just now having a child, or you're going to have a child in the next couple of years. Again, those Trump accounts get underway tomorrow on the 4th of July. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economic Strategist from Annex Wealth Management, thank you so much, and I hope you have a great holiday weekend.
Thank you. You as well.
It's 8:49. He's got the red, white, blue, brown hound farm. And if you are wondering where you can view fireworks and drone shows over the weekend, here's Sandy Max from What's on Tap.
If you love the drones or you're interested in them, Milwaukee, Lake Geneva, and Franklin are your drone hotspots. The Lakefront Drone Show in Milwaukee, that is Friday. That is going to be a 45-minute synchronized drone show that starts at about 9:15, and there will be pyrotechnic drones lighting up the sky, images and themes celebrating patriotism and You'll see some of Milwaukee's iconic landmarks. This is the second annual July 3rd drone show at McKinley Beach in downtown Milwaukee. And then July 4th in Lake Geneva, strong drone show. It's a light show over Geneva Lake that will be celebrating America's 250th birthday. And, you know, they like to do it right there on the lake. There'll be food trucks and balloon artists, roaming performers, and live music. So that's a hot spot for drones on July 4th. And then, stretching out the celebration, Franklin's drone light show is Sunday. And they do both fireworks and a separate drone light show as part of their extended celebration. So that's where you can get your 21st century drone celebration on. But if you like the old school fireworks, no problem. Friday fireworks in Menominee Falls, Muskego, Oak Creek, and Waukesha. And then the 4th of July, Brown Deer, Cedarburg, Cudahy, Franklin, Germantown, Glendale, Greendale, Greenfield, Hales Corners, a lot of the Milwaukee County parks, Pewaukee, Port Washington, Racine, Shorewood, South Milwaukee, St. Francis, Tosa, West Dallas, West Bend, and Whitefish Bay all have July 4th. Fireworks and displays to be proud of. And the Menominee Falls fireworks Friday will be after the parade. The parade starts at 7, so you still got time to make your plans for that. Oak Creek's fireworks Friday are at 9:30, and Waukesha's fireworks are at 9:30 all Friday night. And then Saturday, those July 4th fireworks, including Brown Deer and Cedarburg with the big 4th of July celebrations. Cudahy and Franklin do their fireworks on Saturday before they do their drone show on Sunday. And Germantown has a full day of fun for the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, including cornhole, kickball, a foam party, and face painting, along with their live music. And like I said, Glendale, the Greendale Lions Fest has their 4th of July celebration. Hales Corners, they've got their Firecracker 4 run going on, in addition to bed races and a patriotic pet costume contest as part of their celebration before they launch their fireworks at 9:30.
And you can hear Sandy Max tonight at 6 o'clock on What's on Tap. She's doing a preview of the Uke movie, and she's got the whole scoop on it. So you want to make sure you stick around tonight at 6 and listen to What's on Tap with Sandy Max. I'm Libby Collins, in for Eric and Vince. I'm going to be back after the 9 o'clock news. Now, Liz Lintonen has been doing the news all morning. And I mean, she's a great newswoman. But her real, real obsession is Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce and this wedding. And I've been hearing about it from Liz all week long. Well, she's going to share some of her theories as to what's going on coming up here right after the news on WTMJ.
This is Wisconsin's Morning News. And now, in for Eric Bilstad and Vince Petrano, here's Libby Collins.
Okay, Swifties, get ready. It's the moment you've been waiting for. I'll keep that playing a minute. Liz Lintonen, our ace news person who's been here all morning, you are the expert on Taylor Swift. I don't know anybody in the world who knows more about Taylor Swift than you do. And I know you have been, the last several weeks, but especially this week, mm-hmm. on Taylor Travis wedding watch.
I have been.
All right. So what's going on? Are they already married? Is this just a big party that they're having for a couple days? Or what's going on?
Well, that is the question. And so, okay, they started... At first, I was very skeptical because a Madison Square Garden wedding is not in character with, like, most of what Taylor writes about, most of who she is. But I will say, since she started, you know, dating Travis, getting, you know, romantically involved with Travis, she's been a lot more forward-facing and public-facing with, you know, her displays of affection, things like that. So I was skeptical, but whatever, right? We've seen, you know, them loading in things. We've seen, you know, very lots and lots of proof. There's, you know, they filed the permits, the security, things like that. So last night was allegedly the rehearsal dinner. And
allegedly.
Well, we think it was the rehearsal dinner. Again, everyone anywhere in there has signed a hefty NDA. So there's no way
to
know.
But the NDA, yes. If you break it, it's not like you have to pay any money.
No, it's true. Well, okay, so it's,
so does that mean that you would no longer be a friend?
I have
Taylor's
no idea what
if you break the NDA.
I mean, I would imagine so, because you have...
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
I mean, look what happened to Blake Lively, right?
Well, and that's something I wanted to talk about, too. She's not invited. She is, I just saw
oh,
on
no,
my
not
celebrity.
Invited. Oh, no.
I saw her on my celebrity gossip,
by the way,
my
I wasn't
Instagram
either.
That I follow.
I wasn't invited.
I wasn't either.
Either,
and I feel like I definitely should have been, but that's okay. No, but Blake Lively's like in California or something right now. She
oh,
was
she
spot.
Left town.
She was just, spotted by paparazzi.
She left town.
She is
so,
not
oh,
in New York, I don't think.
Okay.
So, but yeah, so last night I was still skeptical up until I was seeing photos coming in on my feed of, you know, people that were attending this rehearsal dinner, and I saw Taylor Swift's childhood best friend. So on her Fearless album, she has a song called 15 about her best friend Abigail, who's a redheaded, her redheaded best friend who she met in high school, and Abigail was there last night. And that's when I was like, okay, this is probably some sort of
Abigail,
you know,
doesn't come around very
Abigail
often.
Is a very private person.
Okay.
I don't even know really what she does. I haven't looked in a while, but she, you know, she's not someone that would be there if it wasn't like at least something notable with
so
family.
So this is a big deal. So
yes,
is Abigail,
this is a big deal.
Her maid of honor?
I would hope so. I would hope so. I actually have no idea again because I, well, okay, so I thought that they were probably already married.
Yeah.
I thought that that was kind of my running conspiracy theory. I don't know is the thing, but I feel like they would have done it in private. You know, they got engaged in Travis Kelce's backyard, you know, so
with a lot of flowers.
With a lot of flowers, but it was like a very private, intimate thing. So
okay,
I kind of thought.
What's this deal that the theory is that they're building a castle in Madison Square Garden?
I'm not sure, to be quite honest with you.
They've seen
and parts of a castle,
yeah.
But I feel like that's going to be kind of.
Over
not
the top,
tacky.
Maybe? Over the top?
I think that sounds tacky, like, genuinely.
Okay, well, here's my theory.
Okay,
and I,
hit me.
When the engagement happened, and I know how excited you were about that. That was a very
yeah,
big
fun.
Day around here. I talked with Sandy Max on Sunday What's on Tap. My theory is they are filming this whole thing that's going on this weekend, and that's why it's so top secret. And that's going to be released as a documentary for all the Swifties out there who then can join in and be part of the wedding celebration.
I agree with you. I think that would be a really big 180, but I just have a hard time still believing that their actual marriage is going to happen when...
Well, what are they going to do then? If they're not going to have an actual ceremony
tonight? I feel
like it
already happened.
Okay, so
like
this is just a big...
That.
You think this is just a big party? Because it's a 12-hour thing. I mean, they're telling people to arrive at 4, and it's going to last till like 4 a.m.
I'm imagining it's just a big party. Yeah, that's what I honestly think it is, just a big
party.
Do
you think she'll perform?
Oh, God, I don't know. I think there's a lot of famous people on that guest list, as far as I'm aware.
Weren't they talking about, what's her face from Rihanna? I can't think of her name now.
Stevie Nicks.
Yes.
Yeah,
Stevie Nicks is going to
perform. I think there will definitely be some musical performances.
Some,
I don't know if Taylor will perform because it's her own wedding, but.
Well, I've been to weddings where the groom has performed. Which I think is a little weird.
That is weird.
But you know, they do want it to be all about them.
Travis
but,
can't
and,
sing,
and,
so.
And divorce, by the way. But, yeah, but I mean, does she get up there and sing a love song to her husband?
I definitely think it's a
There you go.
Thanks, Isaac.
There you go. Speaking of castles.
Yeah, and I saw the set pieces, but I imagine, I don't know if she'll perform or not, to be quite honest with you. I feel like maybe. I feel like, obviously there's going to be some musical performances because she's having it at, like, arguably one of the biggest music venues in the world. So I'm imagining that there are going to be, you know, some musical performances, some guests, some sort of concert-esque lineup. But again, I'm thinking this is the reception. I'm thinking this is a big party. I am still skeptical that this is the actual wedding. I feel like they probably did it in private. That being said, there are, you know, clerks at the New York City's office that have said they have not seen the marriage license filed yet.
Yeah, but
so...
Then-
it's
but,
not, but it
they're just checking in New York if they got married in another state.
Yeah, and she's not from New York. She's from Philadelphia. She's from
Via
Philly.
Nashville.
She's from Pennsylvania. Yeah.
Yeah,
and then she moved to Nashville when she was 16. So,
okay. So once this is over, and I'm sure there's going to be photos that they're going to release.
Mm-hmm.
Are we done with the Taylor Travis obsession?
Well, so if you listen to her Life of a Showgirl album, there is a song in there about how she wants a family. And so, and I think, okay, if you really want me to get into it for a second, I feel like, I feel like if she and my running theory is that if she and Travis had met 10 years ago, I don't think they would have made it. But I think she wants a family and she's 36 and he's 36. So it's kind of time to like lock in on that a little bit.
So the Swifties are going to be on baby watch.
Yes. Then. Baby watch is what comes after this. And that's what I genuinely think that that's probably what is happening here. So
it's not over yet.
Yeah. It's not over yet.
You're going to stay obsessed.
I will stay obsessed. I love pop culture, so right. I will be on it.
Your favorite Taylor Swift song?
My favorite Taylor Swift song. That is a really hard question. My favorite album of hers is Red, which she put out when she was 22. So probably I like The Lucky One off that one. I like We Are Never Getting Back Together off that one.
There's the one. We're never like getting those. Back together. All right. Liz Lindman, I love your obsession with this, and I know you're going to keep us informed. Join me any Sunday morning.
Anytime.
We can talk about it.
Anytime, Libby. Liz, sounds good.
Thanks so much. All right, it is 9:15 on WTMJ. Coming up, you've heard about this. The New World Screwworm, right?
I have heard a little bit about it, but I don't think I can speak on it.
Well, we have somebody who knows all about it. That's coming up next, right here on Wisconsin Morning News. We keep hearing stories about the New World Screwworm and how it's been seen quite a bit in Texas, New Mexico, but will it come to Wisconsin? And how is it going to affect you and your prices of groceries? Well, joining us is John Kane. John, we've talked to in the past. He is a livestock broker. He has a farm raising cane right here in southeastern Wisconsin. And John, what are you hearing about the New World Screwworm? Do we have to be concerned here?
Good morning, Libby. Thanks for having me on. Hopefully, I can be helpful. And I should state right off the bat, I am not an entomologist. So we're looking at things from the cattle industry. It really hasn't blown up to impact the beef industry or pork industry like people were fearing it would. Last time the New World Screwworm was eradicated was the early 1970s, and I would say animal welfare, well-being, husbandry have all changed, and so I think people keep a little bit closer eye on their animals and easier to treat, and I think people, they're a little bit more on board with not helping the spread of it as well. It's in their own good not to have it spread like wildfire. So in Texas, as of this morning, there's only 20 verified cases. You did mention New Mexico, and that was a dog that had visited the country of Mexico and came back across the border. So it really isn't taking off like wildfire. What I'm seeing is people calling auction barns down there. Now, I do business with a lot of people down there who are basically on the front lines. And instead of panic, it seems a real sense of calm where people are calling in, looking to the auctions or to the buyers and looking for advice on what to do instead of just panic dumping their animals.
Let's talk about exactly why the New World Screwworm is an issue in the cattle industry.
What it is, the New World Screwworm refers to the larva of a fly. And this fly mates once in its life, and it lays its larva in an injury, a scratch, a cut, a wound, what have you, of any mammal, basically, people, deer, cattle, sheep. And then these pesky little larvae, they're shaped, if you look at them, they're kind of shaped like a screw. They look like an auger, basically, with teeth on the tip. So the larvae are deposited into these cuts, and they screw right into the animal and basically eat them alive. So that sounds terrible.
Is there any treatment for that?
There is, actually. Right now, producers are recommended using an antiparasitic treatment called Dexamax. Biggest thing would be ranchers being close to their animals and seeing them quite often, handling them more often, and just looking for injuries and, you know, treating them if there are. So it really has been impressive. I thought it'd be panic and we'd have it all over the place, but it really has been contained to a few counties in Texas.
You mentioned the dog in New Mexico that had an infection for the screwworm, and I assume that animal died. Is there any threat to domestic animals?
No animals have died in the United States from screwworm at all. If it's caught, it's easily treatable. No big deal. Just the animal has a little bit of a wound and an infection there. I would say pet owners keep an eye on their animals. If the animal's showing irritation like anything else, eczema or whatever else, take it to a vet and have it treated. I think there's going to be a bigger impact in Texas on the hunting and wildlife farms that they have down there.
how would you keep an eye on those animals? You know, how do you go out and check your ibex for a little maggot?
So you're talking about the farms where they have just wild animals and then they let hunters come in and shoot the animals?
Correct, yeah. People come from Dallas and Houston with their hunting gear on and shoot them and hang them on the wall. That's a major industry in Texas. So that, it would impact them economically. There is a lot of wildlife. There's so many feral hogs down there. So it looks like it will spread, but the intervention that was successful back in the 60s and 70s was to produce sterile male flies. And so the female flies, they mate once in their life, and then they lay larvae and die. So if they mate with a sterile fly, eventually the species can be eradicated here. And that's how we pushed it out of the United States in the late 60s, early 70s. So Mexico was producing them, and the United States was. They built specific labs to do that, to produce these sterile flies.
If we don't have to worry, then, about New World screwworms, why are we paying so much for beef?
Well, the drought leading to less cattle numbers. And we had our fingers crossed the last time I spoke to you that we'd get rain, start retaining heifers, and producing more cattle. Unfortunately, we've gone the other way. The real cattle country, Kansas and Nebraska, basically burned this spring, and they're in severe drought. Further liquidation of the beef herds that's there. So that's from the supply side. The thing that the screwworm will change, it's not an immediate problem right now for animal health, and it's not a danger to meat supply. We have good inspection. But what's happening is we closed our border to the feeder cattle a year ago last May, so we're on 13 months now. And so what Mexico has done is said, okay, you don't want our feeder cattle, we'll start building beef processing plants. So they're building their own beef plants, and they're going to start finishing out their own cattle instead of shipping them up here to be finished and processed. And that's about $1.2 million per year that they annually send up here. So without those animals, our packing capacity will not be full, and some of those plants, they're actually, unfortunately, being shuttered. And so when you shutter those plants, the remaining packers have more leverage in the industry.
So you're saying prices are not going to go down anytime soon, if at all?
Not from a supply side, no. And demand side, what I've been hearing more and more, there's ravenous demand for beef. And one thing pushing that would be people's use of Ozempic. Apparently, it pairs well with eating a lot of protein. So it's really driven a voracious appetite for consumers to eat protein.
Holy cow, John. You're telling us all kinds of things I didn't know as far as why I'm paying so much for beef at the grocery store. John Kay, you are a man of many talents.
I'm not an entomologist.
Hey, listen, John.
I always wanted to say that on the radio.
Always great to talk with you, John Kay, from Raising Cane Farms. And
Thank you very much, Libby.
Thanks so much, John. Have a happy 4th of July.
You too. Thank you, Libby. Thank you.
It's 9:27. John just makes me laugh. He's got a great sense of humor. And by the way, the farm Raising Cane, you know, this is the one that when you go on 94 and you get around Jefferson, if you look on the south side, you're going to see these long horn cattle like you see in Texas. He has them as pets on the farm. A lot of them. So if you're wondering, that's who John Cain is. All right. We've got Liz coming back in. She's got some stories for us. And also, oh my gosh, I have to share this with Liz. There's new Taylor Travis news. And we'll tell you about that. It's all coming up on Wisconsin Morning News. Welcome back to Wisconsin Morning News. I'm Libby Collins, and I'm in for Vince Vitrano and Eric Bilstead. You know, on July 4th, we're all going to be firing up that grill. We're going to head into some parades. We're going to watch some fireworks. But there's something you need to remember, and that's that there are a lot of people and organizations that need your help. And this year, there's a national initiative going on. It's America 250's Giving 4th. And joining us is Rosie Rios. Rosie, of course, served as CEO of the Bureau of Engraving and Printing at the U.S. Mint. And Rosie, it is great to have you back again this morning.
Thank you so much. Always great to be back.
For people who aren't familiar, let's tell them again what exactly the July 4th initiative is.
Yeah, so America 250 is a national bipartisan organization charged by Congress to plan the nation's 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. But we think it could be something more than just a celebration. And, of course, we have the pomp and circumstance. We have the benefit shows. We have the music. We have the fireworks. But we also think this is an opportunity to use this moment of time and create a movement that we hope will last long after 2026. What better way to think about this moment than Giving Forth? And Giving Forth aims to move the needle of giving from what usually happens at the end of the calendar year, and most people think about their taxes, and move that to the summer season when nonprofits need it the most.
What impact does giving have on some of these not-for-profits?
Well, can you imagine? We were already a generous nation, right? We are a nation of givers. And we are coming together for the semi-quincentennial. But can you imagine all of us coming together to give at the same time? What that could do for a lot of these nonprofits who know how to give back already, right? So they clothe those who need it. They house the unhoused. They feed the hungry. And so as we celebrate together with our own community potlucks, our barbecues, what better way to embrace the spirit of generosity than by giving back through Giving Forth?
All right, well, how can people and other organizations get involved in this giving?
So on America250.org, our website, we have a couple of resources there. So first of all, we already have a number of community organizations that we've been working with on a lot of initiatives. But we also have a link to Charity Navigator. That's an organization that monitors 501c3s that are in good standing with the IRS. So it's kind of fun to go onto that website and really look at all these great nonprofits who are doing some fabulous work already and think about what we value and whom we value. And then you could take the pledge, like come take this journey with us. It literally kicks off this year, but we want to make next July 4th, 2027, the largest day of giving in our country's history. And so we are doing this sea to shining sea, one part of the country to the other, and really trying to make this the legacy of the 250th as the best gift we can think of to our country.
We're talking with Rosie Rio. She is the chair of America 250. Rosie, you mentioned the concerts and some of the other activities. Do you think the controversy that's been created by, you know, the cancellation of concerts, a UFC fight at the White House, things like that, that that's going to take away from the celebration of America 250?
Well, look, our goal is to engage all 350 million Americans as part of this effort. It's what I call 350 for 250. That is our mandate from Congress, and we have to do it in a bipartisan way. So as far as we're concerned, look, we've been planning these celebrations for a long time. Our playbook was unanimously approved by all commissioners in 2024. This is our fourth administration under this legislation. So as far as we're concerned, we've been focused on delivering values-based programming from day one. What better way to think about the legacy of this historical milestone of our country and use the moment to create this new movement of giving back?
Have you been getting support from this legislation?
So by law, we are working with all three branches of government, the executive branch, of course, Congress. We are a congressional commission and even the Supreme Court. Look, I've been serving my country now for 18 years. I started on the Treasury Federal Reserve Transition Team at the height of the financial crisis in 2008, and none of this is easy, but it is absolutely worthwhile. I mean, there's no playbook you could take off the shelf that says, here's how you throw the country's biggest celebration you've ever seen. But because our commission has been so focused on this values-based approach, no politics, just purpose, and it's resonating exactly the way we want it to.
Rosie, I got to ask you, because you were in the Treasury Department, this $250 bill with President Trump's picture on it, I mean, that's unprecedented. I don't think we've ever had a bill in that denomination. And I don't think a living president's picture has ever been on money.
Well, so the denominations go all the way up to a $10,000 bill. And again, that's always been by law. And where the controversy started was with former Secretary Salmon Chase, who put his image while he was Secretary of the Treasury on the $10,000 bill. But look, that's a decision that has to be made by this administration, maybe by this Congress. But from our perspective, you know, we've been focused on this programming now for quite some time. My eighth year on this commission, my fourth year as chair. We know our programming is resonating, and we can't think of a better way to embrace this moment by creating this movement that'll empower those who need it the most.
I don't know if you remember the celebrations in 1976.
Oh, for
the 200,
I do.
Which was huge. I mean, people were excited. There were tall ships. ships coming into New York Harbor. It seemed like the country really was excited about their 200th birthday. Do you think that we have that same level? Because a lot of people I know are saying, you know, it just doesn't feel the same as it did with that celebration 50 years ago.
Well, here's what I remember about the bicentennial. So I was almost 11 years old. My parents came from Mexico to the United States in 1958 for a better life. And 11 years and 9 kids later, my mom ended up raising us as a single parent and somehow sent all 9 of us off to college. So I remember very clearly, it was a cloudy night in Hayward, California on July 4th, 1976, but those fireworks were never brighter. I remember feeling, I mean, look, we were coming out of the Vietnam War. We're coming out of Watergate. The distrust of government was at a high point. Our economy was not that great. But boy, were we ready to celebrate. And so I think there's a lot of people that are looking to the celebration to find that unifying moment. And I think Giving Forth provides that purpose that our country really needs at this time of our history that we hope, again, will live long past 2026, long after the fireworks.
And Rosie, if people are joining us late, let's tell them again what they need to do if they want to take part in America 250's Giving Forth initiative.
You can go to our website at America250.org. You could look at our link to Charity Navigator to look at all the nonprofits that might resonate with you. You can take our pledge online to kind of take this journey with us, starting on July 4th, 2026, and you can continue this pledge and this movement with us all the way through next July 4th, 2027, and hopefully longer.
Happy 4th of July, Rosie.
Thank you so much. Thank you again for having me. It was fun.
Rosie Rios from America 250. Always a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, and shout out to my daughter, Brooke,
who lives here in Milwaukee. It's 943 on WTMJ. You know, as we celebrate America 250, many individuals from the Revolutionary War come to mind. Benedict Arnold's name has gone down in history of being the ultimate traitor. But do you know why a general who had been considered a hero betrayed the colonies? Marquette University's Brian Rinflesh explains his motivation. You had mentioned Benedict Arnold. He's somebody who's always fascinated me. What turned him? As you said, he was a very effective general. He obviously was part of the movement for independence. What changed?
He led several different American expeditions. He led the army against Canada in 1776. He was there at Saratoga, and it's probably one of the reasons why we were successful at Saratoga. But he was dreadfully injured. He had a leg injury that he sustained during that conflict. And at the same time, he's spending his own personal wealth trying to finance troops, supplies, all these different things. And his estate starts to dwindle. His prospects for marriage start to dwindle. He starts to see sort of the light fading for him. And he had spent everything, given everything for the revolution. And in the darkest depths of the war in like 1779 and 1780, things didn't look good for the revolution. So things didn't look good for Arnold. And that's when he made that conscious decision that he would literally give away the fort that he was in charge of to the British in exchange for a fortune.
And after those barbecues and fireworks and we celebrate, continue celebrating America 250 with me and Marquette University history professor Brian Rinflesh, who's going to explain how we gained independence against all odds. And it's all happening this Sunday morning at 11 o'clock on WTMJ Conversations. And you know what? Make sure your kids are listening as well. It's 947 on WTMJ, and we have 75 degrees.
If you love the drones or you're interested in them, Milwaukee, Lake Geneva, and Franklin are your drone hotspots. The Lakefront Drone Show in Milwaukee, that is Friday. That is going to be a 45-minute synchronized drone show that starts at about 9:15, and there will be pyrotechnic drones lighting up the sky, images and themes celebrating patriotism, and you'll see some of Milwaukee's iconic landmarks. This is the second annual July 3rd drone show at McKinley Beach in downtown Milwaukee. And then July 4th in Lake Geneva, strong drone show. It's a light show over Geneva Lake that will be celebrating America's 250th birthday. And, you know, they like to do it right there on the lake. There'll be food trucks and balloon artists, roaming performers, and live music. So that's a hotspot for drones on July 4th. And then stretching out the celebration, Franklin's drone light show is Sunday, and they do both fireworks and a separate drone light show as part of their extended celebration. So that's where you can get your 21st century drone celebration on. But if you like the old school fireworks, no problem. Friday fireworks in Menominee Falls, Muskego, Oak Creek, and Waukesha. And then the 4th of July, Brown Deer, Cedarburg, Cudahy, Franklin, Germantown, Glendale, Greendale, Greenfield, Hales Corners, a lot of the Milwaukee County parks, Pewaukee, Port Washington, Racine, Shorewood, South Milwaukee, St. Francis, Toso, West Dallas, West Bend, and Whitefish Bay all have July 4th fireworks and displays to be proud of. And the Menominee Falls fireworks Friday will be after the parade. Parade starts at 7, so you still got time to make your plans for that. Oak Creek's fireworks Friday are at 9:30, and Waukesha's fireworks are at 9:30 all Friday night. And then Saturday, those July 4th fireworks, including Brown Deer and Cedarburg with the big 4th of July celebrations. Cudahy and Franklin do their fireworks on Saturday before they do their drone show on Sunday. And Germantown has a full day of fun for the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, including cornhole, kickball, a foam party, and face painting, along with their live music. And like I said, Glendale, the Greendale Lions Fest has their 4th of July celebration. Hales Corners, they've got their Firecracker 4 run going on, in addition to bed races and a patriotic pet costume contest as part of their celebration before they launch their fireworks at 9:30.
And you can hear more from Sandy Max tonight at 6 on What's on Tap right here on WTMJ.
To look for America.
You know, when Rosie Rios talked to me, she was the chair of America 250. She mentioned her memories of the bicentennial in 1976, when it seemed Americans were more patriotic. They were healing from the Vietnam War and Watergate scandal. And it was a different feeling 50 years ago than it is today. For the 250th anniversary. You know, this great country is going to celebrate that independence tomorrow, July 4th. And it's a day to reflect on the founding principles of the United States of America. You know, from the moment our forefathers signed the Declaration of Independence, this country has stood for democracy, innovation, and opportunity. It's a day to remember the sacrifices of all those patriots and all who have served this country. It's not a day to revel in personal politics, which can divide us, but it's a time to celebrate our freedom, our lives, our liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Everything we hold dear to our hearts and that many have died for. Coming up after the news, it's the Salute to Service with Steve Scafidi. And I'll be back Sunday morning at 8 o'clock on Wisconsin Weekend Morning News. I'm Libby Collins. Thanks for joining us today, and God bless America.